Hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. You're currently listening to The Barbarian by Emerson, Lake and Palmer. I hope you enjoy it. Wonderful, The Barbarian there by Emerson, Lake and Palmer. Anyway, hello and welcome to Top of the Progs on Smile Radio and also in association with and broadcasting on Progzilla Radio. In the book of Emerson, Lake and Palmer, The Barbarian certainly is chapter one. It's track one from the band's debut album, which was released all the way back 53 years ago-ish in 1970, which is just absolutely phenomenal. Of course, it's called The Barbarian because it's based on a piece of classical music called Allegro Barbaro. Tarot by Béla Bartók, and it's such a great piece. Like, it's a perfect introduction to the band. Like, I guess the only, like, it shows you what Emerson, Lake and Palmer are, pretty much in a nutshell. It's got the kind of very modern, very heavy kind of distorted bass going on there. The bass is doing quite a lot of melody lines. It's got Keith Emerson's crazy Hammond organ, some of his fabulous kind of piano work in the middle, got some ridiculous drum exercises and fills and rudiments from Carl Palmer thrown in there as well for good measure. If it had vocals, it would be like the definitive, this is Emerson, Lake and Palmer. But can you imagine how powerful it was getting that back in 1970 after King Crimson split up? People were wondering what Greg Lake was going to do next, and people wondered what Keith Emerson would do post the Nice. It put the needle on side one, and you're just greeted with that heavy, nasty, gritty, lovely distortion, I guess is probably the only way to put it. But no, I really enjoyed that one. Next up, we got a little bit of Peter Gabriel with a song from, I think this was the encore from his 1983 live album, Plays Live. Now, of course, when Peter Gabriel left Genesis, he stopped with the costumes and theatrical things, but that didn't stop him from slapping a little bit of makeup on and shaving his head and doing all these crazy things. But anyway, I feel like this next song first appeared on his second solo album, 1978's Peter Gabriel, also known as Scratch, the one where he's got those like long fingernails on the cover or whatever is going on. This is track one off that album. Nobody really likes his second album that much, and it's probably his least popular one, but track one is phenomenal, and this is a fantastic version of it. This is On the Air, live in 1983 by Peter Gabriel. there's so much power in that version of the song. Like, I think the thing that Peter Gabriel 2 gets criticised the most for is the production on the album. And yeah, I understand that. You know, it was my first Peter Gabriel album. I inherited it from my dad's record collection. And even at the time, it's something when I didn't really know anything about, you know, the technical side of what went into making an album. Something just never quite sounded right about Peter Gabriel 2. It was produced by Robert Fripp, and of course, Fripp is a genius, you know, he's a creative genius, you know. He helped Peter make that album. They threw all the weird ideas on there, but it just didn't have that kind of amazing... I think it's to do with the arrangements as well. Like, you know, the first album is so big and so epic. Maybe too big, you know, that's the criticism. It's like the first album is really overproduced and the second album is really underproduced, if that makes sense. The first album has the orchestras, it has, like, the Indian drums on there, and it sounds absolutely massive. The second album is just very kind of minimal, very minimal production, minimal overdubs, but, you know, it's kind of like... you know, heaven and hell kind of thing, unfortunately. The intention was there to create a good strip back album, but it went too far. But the energy on that live version of On The Air is just absolutely phenomenal. Now, this next track definitely isn't prog rock, but I thought it's such a good song that's always intrigued me that I thought I would like to play it. And I will give you a little bit of trivia about the song as well. So the track is written by Jeff Lynne. It's sort of an ELO composition, which was then performed by Olivia Newton-John for the film Xanadu. And I think it's one of Jeff Lynne's best and most original songs, because the chord sequences, the harmonies, the structure is just so perfect and kind of so stunning. I've always really loved it. There's a great version that Jeff did himself in the mid-1990s where he recorded like a chilled version of it, kind of what it would have sounded like if he'd have recorded it with the classic ELO lineup. But one really interesting bit of trivia about this song is that Jeff Lynne originally wrote it on acoustic guitar, and he basically sent in a demo to the film's producer saying, "Oh, this is the title track, this is me singing it." He just sat there, no metronome, just did it with an acoustic guitar, and he found out that they cut the intro section of the film in the edit to match his out of time guitar playing. So when they came to record the version with Olivia Newton-John, they had to deliberately play out of time in order to match up to what was happening on screen. So, and apparently it was really hard because they had to deliberately play bars that were too short and too long and deliberately create this sloppy feel with time just in order to get it to sync up with the screen. And it sounds like an absolute nightmare. But anyway, this is Xanadu by Olivia Newton-John and Jeff Lynne.
Xanadu,
I just love that. Love where it goes. Love it. Just feels like such a great song, you know. It's just the piano work on it is immaculate. I slightly controversially, I prefer when Jeff Lynne sings it because it, you know, it's like ELO. Then, like I'm a big ELO fan, and it, I don't know, it just hits a little more close to home when Jeff sings it because it's just like an ELO track then. But no, love that. Love the vocal on that. Love Olivia's vocal on it, especially like the kind of the big chorus, really kind of hitting the upper registers of a range. It's just so magical and powerful. Next up, we have a couple of interesting tracks from Pete Townshend and The Who from the 1980s. This first one is a really kind of interesting history. So Pete Townshend in 1982 released a solo album called All the Best Cowboys Have Chinese Eyes. And the production of this album was documented by The South Bank Show. And The South Bank Show basically followed Pete Townshend around and filmed him, and he talked about his life and things like that. And in this documentary, there's a segment where he demonstrates his home studio, and he's playing like this, at the time, state-of-the-art dual manual synthesizer that looks now like a very cheap electric organ, but it was the bee's knees back in 82, basically. Anyway, he plays these chords and he starts singing this song called After the Fire, and it blew my mind a little bit. Like, the first time I heard him sing it on that kind of documentary, I thought, what is this? I have to get a hold of this song. And I could only find, you know, the live versions. And I found out, you know, the backstory behind it, as he mentions before, one of the live shows, is that basically he wrote this song basically around that time about, you know, all the famine issues in Africa and, you know, putting out the massive fire. What happens after that? What can we do next to help the rest of the world, basically? When The Who got back together to perform at Live Aid, they were going to perform this song, but they didn't have a chance to rehearse it, so it never got performed. But Roger Daltrey recorded it, had a hit single with it, which is pretty cool. But Pete Townshend played it live towards the back end of the 80s. Funnily enough, with David Gilmour on guitar and with Simon Phillips on drums. So not only is it one of Pete Townshend's best compositions of the 80s, we also have David Gilmour's lovely soloing on it and Simon Phillips' lovely playing. This is After the Fire by Pete Townshend.
After the fire still burns. The heart grows older, but never ever learns. The memory is smolder, the soul always yearns. After the fire still burns. Brixton gun and the scream of a child. The night is up, nothing's gonna stop this gang running wild. After the fire still burns. The heart grows older, but never burns. The TV, but I was laughing at Dom DeLuise.
That's one of Townsend's best songs right there, without a doubt. Yes, it's cheesy and 80s, but I love that. I love Simon Phillips' drumming on that. Blimey, those kind of offbeat hat things he's doing in the verses when the drums fully kick in is absolutely brilliant. I love how it builds up. You know, the first kind of verse, he has got minimal percussion and David Gilmour working his magic over the top of the track. And then the second half is just this massive thing. I love the lyrics in that. Like, he's talking about the tragedy and crisis. Like, can you imagine an alternate reality instead of Feed the World, where the charity single was After the Fire? Can you imagine, like, how different the world would have been? And instead of that, we got the track that everybody guessed it on, and it was everyone singing backing vocals on After the Fire. I think it's a tragedy that The Who didn't perform it at Live Aid. I think Townsend should have pushed to do it, like, even if they only rehearsed it a couple of times. Like, at that point, Kenny Jones was the drummer, and of course, like, John Entwistle can play anything, he can learn anything really fast. Kenny Jones could have learned it really quickly and could have just played it straight away. So I think it's a shame, because had he have played it at Live Aid, I think it would have been remembered as one of his most famous and kind of best compositions of all time. I think the moment, you can almost imagine it in your head, like it being as iconic as when Queen did Bohemian Rhapsody and Radio Gaga at Live Aid. You can imagine this powerful statement being watched by millions of people across the world on the early satellite link up for Live Aid. It would have been spectacular, but it's still a great song, which I really enjoy listening to. This next one is a song that Roger Daltrey doesn't like that much. This was performed by The Who, and I've been listening to The Who a lot recently. Of course, Keith Moon passed away in 1978 when he was 33, 34, 35, around that age. I can't remember exactly how old he was, but Pete Townsend was insistent on getting Kenny Jones in the band, the drummer from The Faces. And I feel like this is where things kind of initially started to go wrong between Pete and Roger. They've had they don't like each other, but they've had a lifelong kind of mutual respect for each other, I guess. Anyway, Kenny Jones joined the band, and Roger Daltrey was really kind of upset and angry, because he was like, Kenny's a great drummer, but he's just not right for The Who. It doesn't sound the same, it doesn't feel the same. And they carried on recording, you know, they did this album, Face Dancers, in 1981 with Kenny Jones. And yes, Roger Daltrey is right, the music feels completely different without Keith Moon on drums. But this song is credited as being one of the most important at that time, as it kind of held the band together. Even though Daltrey doesn't like it, it was a good song for them all to kind of put their energy into and focus on. It's one of my favourites. This is You Better You Bet by The Who.
say you better.
You better, you better, you better.
When I say I need you, you say you better.
You better, you better, you better.
When I say I love you, you say you better.
See, I really enjoyed that, and I think one thing The Who definitely pioneered was, like, the use of a backing track throughout a whole song, like, the synthesizer loops on, like, Barbara O'Reilly, Won't Get Fooled Again, Who Are You, and on that song, there's, like, that constant, like, synth loop running throughout the background that drives the whole piece along in a really kind of nice and satisfying way that makes it kind of really fun and bouncy and enjoyable, but I love that song, even though Pete doesn't like it. They say that when Keith Moon passed away and Kenny Jones became the drummer of the band, The Who as a band, musically, were the most consistent they have ever been. You know, they could guarantee that every single night they were going to put on a great show and that the drummer wasn't going to pass out, but they said that unfortunately, you know, this kind of stability didn't sell concert tickets. There was no wild party. It was quite sad, really, when I was reading up about it, that a lot of people would go and watch The Who because they didn't know what was going to happen next. They didn't know whether Keith was going to destroy his drum kit, throw a drumstick at Roger Daltrey, blow his drum kit up with dynamite, do his Uncle Ernie bit from Tommy and swear at everybody, pass out or jump up and down or have, like, goldfish in his drums or something weird like that. You know, they had no idea what was going to happen next. But once Kenny Jones was in the band, it was smooth sailing. Everything was really tight, and that was great musically, but it didn't sell records. It didn't get them talked about in interviews, which is quite sad, if I'm honest. Now, last week, or was it the week before? No, it was last week we had the Larks, Tongues in Aspic 50th anniversary special. Now, I thought this week I'd play a little bit of 80s King Crimson playing 70s King Crimson. So, the 80s trilogy is Discipline, Beat, Three of a Perfect Pair. The band is Adrian Belew, guitar and vocals, Robert Fripp on guitars, Tony Levin on bass, and our mate Bill Bruford on the drums. Now, they didn't really play much 70s compositions because it wouldn't really work, let's be honest, that lineup doing songs like 21st Century Schizoid Man and things like that. It just wouldn't work in that arrangement, but they did take some of the 70s material, like, for example, Lark's Tongues 2, and they totally kind of new-waved and 80s'd it up and put this kind of new, insane energy basically inside it. And one of the kind of best things they were able to do is, of course, King Crimson did Red in 1974, and they disbanded, like, just after the album was complete, so they never got to tour it, they never got to play most of those songs live, which is really sad, but they did rectify that in the 80s. This is a great version of the title track Red, performed live in Montreal in 1984, and it is absolutely astounding hearing the 80s band play it in all their glory. This is Red, live in 1984 by King Crimson. You can tell Robert's loving that. Even though he's sat down and you can't see him, it's only a live audio recording, I can just picture his little smiling face absolutely loving playing Red live for the first time. Oh my word, it just blows me away, does that recording. They've tweaked it in such a way that they've made it kind of more, I don't know, the original recording is so kind of dark and angular, but they've kind of made it slightly more melodic and easy on the ear. But it's still an aggressive, hard listen, but nonetheless I love it. So we had a bit of Peter Gabriel earlier, now we're going to have a little bit of his old band, the Genesis. And you know how I was saying he stopped dressing up when he left Genesis? Well, this song was the high point of his dressing up, and I agree with Phil Collins. Like, Phil Collins has talked about this track in particular, kind of offhand, saying that the costume bit for this song has eternally overshadowed the song, meaning like every time someone talks about it, they talk about the costume, but no one talks about the fact that it's got one of Tony Bark's finest keyboard solos ever in there. It's got some of Peter's best vocals and some great melodies in there. The song, of course, is Colony of Slippermen, and I will now overshadow the piece by talking about the costume. For those who haven't seen it, you know, the footage is in all the Genesis documentaries. It's the gross bit of the album where Peter Gabriel comes out of this giant tube in the stage show, and he's dressed in this, like, I don't even know how to describe it, this like green, like, he looks almost like a broccoli with loads of growths on him, and he's supposed to be like this weird kind of sexual offspring or something like that. And he would come out and he would dress as the and it looks disgusting. That's the Slipperman costume. It looks absolutely awful. It does look horrific, and it was part of the kind of big thing with the stage show, and everyone went wild for the Slipperman, and it has the song Colony of Slipperman. But as I said, the song is so overshadowed by what Peter Gabriel's wearing with the costume. But I thought we'll give a little bit of praise and love to the song. This is The Colony of Slippermen by Genesis.
I wandered lonely as a cloud till I came upon this dirty street. I've never seen a stranger crowd. Summer diggers on squeaking feet, continually pacing with nonchalant embracing. Each harvest disgracing, one facing the moves to say hello. Covered in slimy lumps, with lips that slide across each chin. His twisted limbs like rubber stumps. I waved in welcome, say please join in. My grip must be flipping, cause his handshake keeps slipping. My hopes keep on dipping, and his lips keep on smiling all the time. We'll be right back.
Lovely song that's overshadowed by, unfortunately, one of Peter Gabriel's best and worst decisions of all time. Yes, it got them talked about, but at what cost? At what cost? Anyway, moving on now to a little bit of Pink Floyd with one of my favourite tracks from the band's 1994 album, The Division Bell. This is a Rick Wright composition with, of course, Pauly Samson and David Gilmour collaborating on the lyrics about the fall of the Berlin Wall, and it's a fabulous, uplifting tune. This is A Great Day for Freedom by Pink Floyd.
On the day the wall came down, they threw the locks onto the ground, and with glasses high, we raised a cry, for freedom had arrived. On the day the wall came down, the ship of fools had finally run aground, promises lit up. Now life devalues day by day, as friends and neighbors turn away, and there's a change that even with regret cannot be undone. Now frontiers shift like desert sands, while nations wash their bloodied hands of loyalty of history.
Love that song. I love The Division Bell. Controversially, maybe my favourite, second favourite or third favourite Pink Floyd album. But anyway, we're unfortunately nearing the end of this week's show, and I'd like to close with a bit of classic Yes with the title track from the band's 1977 album, Going for the One. This is Going for the One by Yes. Thank you all for listening. I hope you have a good week. Goodbye.